D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, by our friend Trevor Maddich. Hi, Trevor. How are you?
Hello, Adam and Grace. How are you doing, man?
We're doing well. Thank you for joining us a little bit earlier today. So let's talk about the Titans rookie class minus Cam Ward. I want to ask you the same question we were asking ourselves and our listeners. So take Cam Ward out of the equation for just a moment. How do you feel about the Titans rookie class based on what you've seen so far this season?
I think from round three below, they added a lot of good pieces. And I really like the draft there. You know, they got a couple of guys that can be stars round three and below. I think Kevin Winston Jr., the safety, once he gets fully healthy, has the ability to be a force in the box, a force in tackling, an enforcer of receivers coming across the middle with the ability to blitz and to do all kinds of things. You know, he showed flashes of that, but really he was injured so much in college that he's got a lot of work to do from a standpoint of technique and recognition. So this guy is a project that's shown the ability to move forward. I really like him. I like the receivers they took in the fourth round. You know, obviously DK is in the Pro Bowl as a returner, and that alone is enough. I mean, if you had said that you drafted him, you drafted a returner in the fourth round and he became a Pro Bowler his rookie year, you'd say, good, that's enough. But he's got the chance to develop as a receiver. He's got a lot of work to do there, especially as a blocker. But, you know, because he was a liability for much of the year blocking on running plays. And so he needs to work on that. And he needs to, you know, work on catching the ball so it doesn't beat him up as a receiver. So, but Pro Bowler is a rookie. That's a win. I think Gunnar Helmet, tight end, shown the ability to develop into a very important piece at that position for them. And I think Elik Eilmanner, I think, is what he is. You know, I don't know that he is going to be a great receiver, but he can be a very good complementary piece. But he's drafted in the fourth round. And then Marcus Harris at corner in from Cal, he was drafted in the sixth round. I think that he showed some flashes and the ability to maybe be able to develop into a guy that can contribute on a rotational basis. And so, you know, I think that from three down, I really like the way this class, as far as it was healthy, performed. I'm worried about number two,
Femi?
Oladejo. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm worried about him. And, you know, we can talk more about him, but the but for the rest of it, you know, I think that the Titans have to be happy about the way this class has come in and contributed to an otherwise pretty miserable season.
Trevor, the college football playoff continues tomorrow, starting with the Cotton Bowl between Miami and Ohio State. But the one matchup in the quarterfinals I am most fascinated by is the Rose Bowl game on New Year's Day, Alabama versus Indiana. I love the storyline of the new kid on the block, so to speak, Indiana against the blue blood, Alabama. What's your read on this matchup? What are you going to be watching for when you watch the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day?
It's hard to know which Alabama team's going to show up, isn't it? I mean, Indiana has proven that they are worthy of that number one ranking. Last year, Indiana laid waste to everybody who wasn't the top team. Ohio State played them in the regular season and blistered them, and then they lost fairly significantly in the first round of the playoffs. And so last year it seemed like, okay, we know they're better than most, but are they really top tier? This year, they upgraded a quarterback, won the Heisman Trophy, went to Oregon and beat them soundly. What was it, 30 to 10 or 30 to 20, I think it was. And one of those touchdowns for Oregon was a defensive touchdown. So this is a magnificent performance on the road against a playoff team. And then they beat another playoff team on a neutral site, Ohio State. And so Indiana has shown itself to be worthy in the playoff. One thing that I think is very quietly excellent about them is their running game. Because we think of the quarterback, Fernando Mendoza, that won the Heisman Trophy this year, throwing to receivers that'll be in the NFL next year. But quietly, they have one of the most dominant ground games in college football. Six different games, they gained over 300 yards on the ground. Think about that. That's just insane. And so as far as Alabama's defense goes, it's a completely different problem from the Oklahoma game, where Oklahoma was very one-dimensional. They kind of have been all year, haven't been a very good running team, and Alabama could focus on the quarterback for the Sooners, John Mateer. Well, in this case, they can't do that because Indiana can hammer them every which way. But which Alabama will show up? Because in the first quarter, basically, of the Oklahoma game, they gave up, at least early in that game, 17 points to go down 17-0. Then Alabama flipped the switch, and they became more like the dominant, physical, skilled Alabama teams that we're used to seeing under Nick Saban. The offense just went on a tear against one of the best defenses in the nation, and the defense was dominant in ways that they haven't really been very often this year. And so that's the Alabama that's going to have to show up to have a chance against Indiana. But if they do, Alabama can be as physical and nasty and hard to beat as anybody in this playoff. So really it comes down to, in my opinion, is can, you know, Indiana's skill overall is going to be better than Alabama's. Can Alabama maintain what Nick Saban called the Bama factor, where teams hate to play you because they know that they're going to get pounded physically, if not into submission, certainly into the mud. And that's the kind of Alabama team that will have to show up to have a chance.
Now, Trevor, how do you see this Ole Miss and Georgia game going? Because this is an interesting matchup to me because they played so closely contested the first matchup. That second and that last, the second quarter and the fourth quarter, Georgia really put a number on Ole Miss. But for the most part, this was a tightly contested game. Now, Georgia's defense has gotten much better as the season went. I thought Ole Miss would probably take a step back in their first game, but they ran through their opponent. Do you see this being more so like the first game, or do you see this being a low-scoring game?
You know, I see this being different than the first game, Derek, because of that defense. You know, you can make the case that Trinidad Chambliss, the quarterback for Ole Miss, is better now than he was when he played Georgia midseason because he's got six more starts under his belt, and that would be true. And really, against Georgia, you go back and look at that game, and he was unstoppable in the first three quarters. Ole Miss scored 35 points in three quarters against that Georgia defense, but then Georgia flipped the switch. And in the fourth quarter, Chambliss threw 10 passes, completed one of them for 1 yard. Georgia shut him out in the fourth quarter, came back from behind, and won that game. And since then, Georgia's been one of the best teams in the country with one of the best defenses in the country. Before that fourth quarter switch flip, Georgia's defense struggled against better passing teams at defending balls thrown down the field. In other words, sometimes it was busted coverages with young guys in the secondary. Sometimes it was the guy was there, but when the ball came down, the receiver seemed to always get it, not the defender. And once they got through that 35-point blitz by Trinidad Chambliss and Ole Miss in the first three quarters, flipped that switch. And since then, Georgia's defense has been fantastic. The last four teams they played, no one scored more than 10 points against Georgia. So I think the improvement in the Georgia defense is going to be the biggest difference in this game. And Trinidad Chambliss, as good as he was the first time around, it wasn't good enough to win. They lost that game 43-35. And I think that in this game, Chambliss will have to be degrees better in order to have a chance to beat a Georgia team that is a different bunch than when they played Ole Miss in midseason.
Trevor Maddich is with us. And Trevor, of course, we're really looking forward to the playoff games. Later today, Tennessee's going to play their bowl game. Tomorrow, Vanderbilt plays their bowl game. I don't know how much you've had a chance to watch the run-of-the-mill bowl games. I haven't watched much. I'd like to see a game that looks good to me. What kind of quality of play have you seen in the non-playoff bowl games?
Well, I've seen great quality of play, for goodness sake. I mean, there's been some good stuff. I mean, look at the Pop-Tarts Bowl. That was one of the most entertaining college football games of the season, partly because of just the way they branded it and the way all the Pop-Tart mascots were jumping around and the way the broadcast maximized that. And then on the field, you had two teams in BYU and Georgia Tech that were playing to win big time. And that game came down to the wire. I mean, BYU finally sealed it with a late interception in the end zone. And so it was a very fun game to watch. The game that people have dubbed the Disappointment Bowl was the Pinstripe Bowl between Penn State and Clemson. Both of those teams made the playoff last year, both expected to make it again this year and compete for a national championship. And both of them had very disappointing seasons. Penn State, they lost six in a row, got their quarterback hurt, fired their coach. You know, Clemson, they really struggled. But Clemson won their last four games. Penn State won their last three. And both teams were desperate to win this bowl game. So they ended the season on a winning streak and went into the offseason with a positive trajectory. Both of those teams wanted to win. They fought tooth and nail to the end, even though both of them had epic opt-outs and epic injuries. The guys that were on the field wanted to play, and it was a fun game to watch. To me, this is what those bowl games are. And I think, you know, Tennessee, I think it's going to be that way against Illinois. You know, there have been some opt-outs on both sides, significantly for Tennessee on the Illinois side. The Big Ten's leading pass rusher, leading sacker, doesn't play for Ohio State or Indiana. He plays for Illinois, and he's opted out, so that's a good thing. Chris Braswell's opted out for Tennessee. But overall, these are two teams that are largely intact and two teams that are going to fight like crazy. I'd love to see Brett Bielema and Coach Heupel in an alley fight. I mean, I would watch pay-per-views for that. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, Bielema has the edge because he's a big old defensive lineman and all that stuff. But I think Heupel's got an anger to him, a football anger, that would, the fury in that fight would be great. And both teams play that way. I mean, you know, Vandy kind of same way. You know, Vandy's got every reason to put a cap on this season and take a historic season to another level, but they're facing an Iowa team that's a very difficult matchup for them. So I think, you know, both of those teams are going to have bowl games that'll be entertaining, and I've loved this bowl season. I think it's been great.
I'm really glad to hear you say that, because we had Scott Ramsey on a week or so ago, and, you know, he pretty much admitted there's a lot of contracts for the bowl games that are up, and everybody's wondering how sponsorship, crowd, audience, you know, how it's going to be viewed in the coming years as we're now in this playoff era. But it sounds like you're pretty optimistic that we can preserve the bowl system the way it, and have it go alongside the playoffs.
I think it has to. Well, you really have to preserve the bowl system, in part because of tradition. It's one of the things that differentiates college football from the NFL. But another part of it is that you need the bowls for development of those mid-level teams. You know, I mean, Notre Dame decided that they didn't want to play in a bowl after they got bounced out of the playoff on the final ranking. And so that's been a controversial decision. But Notre Dame is a top-level team. And when you look at all these teams that are 6-6, 5-7, 8-4, and they're trying to get to the next level, there's a couple of things that bowls give them. One is 2 weeks of practice extra that really feature a lot of the young guys that give them a step forward in their preparation to start spring training at a higher level, spring ball. And these are important parts of the development of those mid-level teams that want to get to the next level. And the other thing is, when you win a bowl, you get a trophy. And very often it's a big, gorgeous trophy that goes in the trophy case. And you can say forever, you know, Penn State, we were the Pinstripe Bowl champions. And that might not be national champion, but guess what? That's a championship, and you get a trophy for it, you know? And so it's the kind of thing that is important to maintain and important to not devalue. It'll be devalued to a degree, especially as the playoff will eventually, I believe, go from 12 to 16. But the NIT exists for a reason. And teams could opt out of that, but they don't from a basketball standpoint. And I think from a football standpoint, there's just too much good that the bowl system does for the game, not to mention the cities and the sponsors and the charities that benefit from those bowls as well.
Trevor Maddich has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan and Donick. He joins us every Tuesday, and he is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, great stuff as always. Happy New Year. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, Adam.
615-737-1025. We roll on. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.